So this one time, I was actually working in a seagrass bed, pushing for, you know, like saltwater ghost shrimp, you know, that people feed like their fish. And I want to say I was a lot deeper than I should have been. The tide was up. And so I see this big shadow kind of moving in. As it got closer, I made out the color of the shark a lot better, and it was gray, and it was definitely a bull shark. It's probably at least 9 foot. It was huge. Pulled the net out of the water, and I like jabbed at the shark when it came close to me, trying to, you know, scare it off again. And it took off behind me. And at this point, I turned to the boat, and I'm like yelling, like, shark, like.
What's up, reef fanatics? Welcome back to another episode of the Coral Reef Talk podcast. Today we're talking about diving and collecting different things with Levi Peterson. How's it going, Levi?
It's going good. How about yourself?
It's going pretty good over here. I just received a shipment of cleanup crew. I put in an order with Reef Cleaners and got some Nassaria snails, some Astrea snails, got a, I believe it's called a pitho crab.
Okay.
For the 10-gallon aquariums. It's a new crab to me in having them in my aquarium, but he's already like chowing down on that Florida Calerpa, and
nice.
He's enjoying it. So it's pretty cool.
Awesome.
So how are your tanks doing?
Everything's doing good. I can't think of anything that's going wrong with any of the tanks right now. So
that's always good.
Yep.
So with this podcast episode coming out a little bit after April Fool's, how did you feel about some of those April Fool's jokes or whatever that we saw all across social media?
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to lie. When I first like started scrolling through Facebook that morning, I had forgot it was even April Fool's, and I saw some of these things. I'm like, some of them almost had me, and then I realized, okay, it's April Fool's. We're good. Like, especially I saw the Biota post. I'm like, okay, this is what's going on. Uh-huh. I know what day it is now.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and some of them stumped me for sure.
Yeah, this is the Biota post right here. This is like a hippo tang and a yellow tang combined.
Yeah. That was just brutal. That'd be so amazing if that was an actual real thing.
Yeah, I mean, crazy. Yeah, it looks pretty cool. I mean, it's a nice Photoshop job, whoever did that.
Yeah, it really is. Nice
and clean. Yeah, and then there was another one that I saw that I feel like a lot of people got angry over this one, and it was actually put out by Salem Clements that we had on the podcast, and he put out the cure to brown jelly. Like, I don't know if you haven't heard of this. He basically said that the cure was using peanut butter and dosing that in your tank. And how do you feel about this April Fool's joke or prank?
I mean, I thought it was pretty good. I read the article, and like, he was actually like, you know, putting data in there, you know, trying to make it actually look like it was true. But he did throw a disclaimer in there at the end to kind of say, hey, look, this is a joke. Don't actually put peanut butter in your tank. But there was definitely a few people, like I saw some comments on like the Facebook posts and stuff. They were pretty frustrated, and I'm like, come on guys, it's April Fool's, you know?
Yeah, at first I was looking at this thing, I was like following it, tracking with it, I was like, there's science. I was like, but wait, peanut butter? And then like you with the other post, I was like, oh yeah, it's April Fool's Day, has to be a joke.
Yeah,
but I mean, I don't know, some of these April Fool's things could really throw off a new hobbyist, right? So
yeah, for sure.
But it was April Fool's.
Yep.
It should be all good now. We're past that. Hopefully. I mean, if you're not past that, let us know in the comments below what you thought about it. But I don't know, there were some good ones.
I'd have to agree with that for sure.
But today we're going to be talking about diving, collecting, snorkeling, scuba diving, collecting your own corals and sea sponges and stuff. And that's something that you do, but there's like regulations and stuff around it. Like you have to, I don't know, walk us through that. What does it take to be able to collect on your own? Because you usually hear that you can't take things from the ocean.
Yeah. So yeah, in today's episode, we're pretty much going to go over, you know, something that I enjoy, which is, you know, snorkeling, diving, and just, you know, doing some collecting for, you know, my personal tanks like this one behind me. So first off, I'm going to break down the rules for like a recreational fishing license here in Florida. And this is just for Florida. I don't really know any of the other states, you know, laws against this because I don't live in any other states. But for Florida, if you have a recreational fishing license, you are allowed 5 of each, you know, species, up to 20 marine life items per day. So like, let me break this down a little bit more for you guys. For say, if I went out and grabbed 5 of the same species of gorgonians, that's all I could get of that specific species. But I could go get 5 more of a different species of gorgonian, and I'd still be under that 20. So you just got to be careful. You definitely don't want to mess with the FWC because they know their stuff pretty well. But yeah, just be like, take what you need. Like if you go out and you're snorkeling in the Keys or something, definitely be aware of where you are too, because there's a lot of like parks and stuff that you can't collect in. Like, you want, if you need some cleanup crew, you know, you could literally go down to the Keys, get a couple Astrea snails, get a few blue legs, you know. But yeah, five over, you cannot go over five of each species here in Florida if you have a recreational fishing license. But there is, like, you know, licenses like the SPL, the Saltwater Products License, and the Marine Life License, which you cannot receive anymore from the government. You have to buy it off a person that already has that. But that's way more complicated for a different day. But yeah, if you're a regular person and living in Florida and you have a recreational fishing license, you're allowed five of each species and up to 20 specimens per day.
That's really cool. Yeah. And so I imagine you, do you get like some paperwork talking about different species, or with it being so many like different gorgonians and sea sponges and stuff, they just have a very general guideline on that?
Yeah, I mean, they have a whole list on their website, and realistically, if you don't know what you're, you know, out there looking at or collecting, don't take it. Like, if you don't know what, like, just don't take anything if you don't know what you're doing. Definitely know your stuff and like know what can be taken, because there's a lot of protected species like the sea fans and stuff down in the Florida Keys. You got to be very careful, because that'll put you in jail.
Yeah, and like you said, they're super serious about that, and they will check what you're bringing back if you get stopped and stuff. So how far out do you go to collect, and what type of things are you looking for? Do you collect, because you bring these species home and you put them in your tanks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so usually I got a few spots, you know, up here near Tampa Bay, and then a bunch of spots down in the Keys that I access without a boat. But I have my own boat now, so it's kind of nice to get out to a couple different spots and explore a little more off the shore. I'm not going to specifically share exactly where I go, because I don't want, you know, a bunch of people running to those spots and, you know, kind of
ravaging
those areas. You know, I kind of,
your
only
spot.
A few people know of my spots. So I'm very selective with telling people, just because I want to, you know, protect that environment. You don't want a bunch of people just running there and just taking what they want, you know?
Yeah. You don't want them to wipe it out and then you have nothing left.
Yeah. Not that would happen, but you know, I just like to keep my areas, you know, secluded. But yeah, anyway, so usually I'm pretty much doing stuff from shore, just kind of snorkeling rock piles, random ledges, and just jetties. I do some bridge snorkeling, you know, swimming under bridges and stuff. Can get pretty sketchy, as sharks usually tend to hang around bridges, so you gotta be careful and just, you know, kind of keep eyes in the back of your head, because I've seen plenty of sharks. I do a little bit offshore. I'm not certified for scuba diving yet. I'm hoping to soon. I do a little bit of free diving. You know, I probably go down maybe 25 feet. It's probably usually the max for me. Other than that, I usually stay towards shore and do a lot of, you know, shoreline collecting and get some different kinds of species that are closer to shore until I get scuba dived. So yeah.
Nice. Very cool. Sounds like a lot of fun, but what's your closest encounter with a shark? Like,
okay. All right. So this one time I was actually working in a seagrass bed pushing for, you know, like saltwater ghost shrimp, you know, that people feed like their fish. And I want to say I was a lot deeper than I should have been. The tide was up. I was probably up to my chest, and I had a little net. I was walking through the grass, you know, trying to catch shrimp. And I see this big. So first off, Elizabeth was with me in our boat, and she was on the boat. And I told her specifically, you know, look out for sharks. Keep an eye out, you know, just in case you see anything, or even dolphins coming in. Because I mean, dolphins aren't usually mean, but they can get pretty rowdy. And so I see this big shadow kind of moving in. I'm like, oh, it looks like it's a nurse shark, which is weird, because you don't usually see nurse sharks up here typically. I used to spot them every so often. But as it got closer, I made out the color of the shark a lot better, and it was gray, and it was definitely a bull shark. It's probably at least 9 foot. It was huge.
Yeah, those are not good.
So, yeah, swam up close to the net, and I kind of, you know, jabbed the net, you know, just kind of jolt, and kind of scare it off. And it shot around, and mind you, I'm probably in 4 foot of water, and you could see the wake as it took off, and then you could see the wake kind of come back around at me.
Uh-huh.
So at that point, I pulled the net out of the water, and I like jabbed at the shark when it came close to me, trying to, you know, scare it off again, and it took off behind me. And at this point, I turned to the boat, and I'm like yelling, like, shark, like, I need to get, like, I was freaking out. Like, I was like, man, this is not good.
And how far were you from the boat?
20 foot, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was a ways from the boat, and I turned and just started yelling, and Elizabeth's just on the phone, you know, talking, I think, with my mom or something. And she's just, like, gives me a weird look, like I'm crazy.
Uh-huh.
And I'm, like, freaking out, and it took off behind me, so I'm like, okay, maybe it actually took off. And so, like, I'm, like, praying in my head, like, please, like, I don't want to die today. I just want to get back to the boat.
Yeah.
And out of the blue, I'm like starting to kind of go back to the boat. And I feel this big, like, hard hit in my leg, like super hard. It knocked me off my feet. And I had a bruise for, I don't know, probably almost a couple weeks. Like, it was a huge bruise on my leg, knocked me off my feet. And I, like, originally the first thing that went in my head when I felt that, I'm like, every time I hear someone share a story about how they lost their leg or their arm, like, oh, I just felt a bump and it was gone. I didn't even realize it was gone. So I'm thinking, like, in my head, like, is my leg gone? Like, what? I'm just freaking out and I'm just thrashing around. I'm like, just, yeah, not normally what you would do if you saw a shark, because it's probably going to get more attention from the shark. But I somehow made my way back to the boat, and I don't know how I did it, but I jumped in the boat somehow without even, you know, climbing in the back. And I'm just like laying on the boat, like the front of the boat. And Elizabeth's like, what happened? And I'm like, there's a shark. Like, it just went crazy. And she looks over the side of the boat, and the shark swam right next to the boat. And she said that shark was just about as long as the boat. And I have like a 14 and a half foot boat. So that thing had to have been at least 9 foot. And that was, I don't think I went back into the water for almost 4 to 5 months after that, just because I was traumatized. Yeah, I was not pleased with that experience.
Yeah, that sounds insane. And so when you were like jabbing at it, did you actually hit it, or you were just like punching it in the water?
If I'm honest with you, I can't remember if I hit it or not. I was just like, I was not there. I was just trying to figure out how to get out of that situation.
Yeah, no, for sure. That is insane, dude.
Yeah, that was crazy. But yeah, I'm back to swimming under bridges and stuff where a lot of them call home. So,
all right, cool. I mean, should we title this The Dangers of Diving for Sea Sponges? No, I'm just kidding. Maybe we could.
But yeah, that's probably my closest experience. Not a couple weeks ago, I was underneath a bridge, and there was this big school of tarpon that was coming through, and I thought that was really cool. And then there was a small hammerhead that came up. It was probably like 4 or 5 foot maybe. Okay. And just shot out of the blue and kind of swam through the school of tarpon. I thought that was pretty cool. Scared me a little bit at first.
Yeah.
But once I noticed it was a smaller one, I'm like, okay. But yeah, a lot of the stuff that I do under bridges, it's kind of a little dark and a little bit more murky. You got strong current. So usually I kind of crawl along the rocks and kind of pull myself around, because that current's ripping through there usually.
Okay. Yeah. That was my next question. It was like, what's your visibility like? Because you have some videos that you're going to share, but that's using what, like a GoPro or something?
That's my iPhone.
Oh, really? Your iPhone. Okay. Yeah. So, but seeing it through a camera and then seeing it through like your mask or goggles or something is a lot different. So what's the visibility like when you're down there?
So there's been a few times this bridge that I specifically go to get a lot of the stuff, it's pretty murky usually. I want to say maybe 2 to 3 foot on average, which is pretty bad. But yeah, so there's some days I go there and you could see way out, like 20 foot almost. Like you could see almost all the way down to the middle of the bridge, which is pretty crazy. But yeah, most of the time it's probably about 5 to 6 foot visibility, which is decent for a bridge. And if it's too murky, like if I'm like getting 1 to 2 foot of visibility, I don't even bother, because you don't know what's there. You can't see anything. Yeah. If you want, you could throw up a couple of videos and I'll kind of explain what I'm seeing and what's going on.
Okay. Yeah. Let's take a look at this one, and they'll probably just loop while we're talking about it, but let's throw this one up there.
Yeah. So this is probably about 5 foot of water, and this is just a Leptogorgia gorgonian. This is one species that I really enjoy keeping in aquariums. It's a non-photosynthetic species. But it's rather hardy in my experience. It does really well for me. It grows rapidly, and it has decently sized polyps. So it eats a wide variety of planktons. Yeah, super cool. There's a bunch of algae around this rock and barnacles and sponges in the background. This is at one of my favorite spots to dive, just because it's usually the visibility is decent, but you get to see a little bit of everything, tropical fish, sponges, corals, you name it. It's pretty cool. So
yeah, that's awesome. And then this one right here. Where are we at here?
Yeah, so this is actually in that same spot. This is a really bright red or like orangish tunicate. I thought it was really cool. It's almost like it was fluorescing in the sunlight. I thought that was really cool. Stuck out like a sore thumb. So I'm like, I gotta get this on camera because it's gorgeous. So yeah. And I'm guessing with this spot specifically, the water's constantly flowing through So you're going to get a lot of like filter feeding vertebrates like sponges, you know, and gorgonians, non-photosynthetic corals. So yeah, this is definitely one of my favorite areas because I, you know, have a passion for that kind of stuff. And I enjoy going to this spot quite frequently and kind of monitoring the conditions. And with my non-photosynthetic tank, I've actually recently started using the water from this area to do my water changes with. Like I go every other weekend usually. I do like a 10-gallon water change, and I've noticed like some insane results with the sponges specifically. Sponges have always been, you know, something that I do decently with, but ever since I've actually been using real seawater with them, they're doing extremely well. And I'm assuming that's because a lot of the stuff I'm using that water where it specifically comes from.
Yeah.
And I'm replenishing plankton in there constantly from the actual, like, you know, the sea, which has its benefits and has its, you know, demises. Because, I mean, you may get some plankton and stuff that grow into something that you don't want. So we'll see that with how, you know, how it goes with time. But so far, I'm seeing some amazing results with the NPS tank behind me. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like sea sponges. So you gave me some purple sea sponges that I have in the 125. And those, unfortunately, are starting to change color in not the best of ways. And so I've been putting some phytoplankton in the tank and trying to boost that up for them to give them some more nutrition in the tank. So we'll see how that goes. Do you have any tips for that if once they start like losing color?
Yeah, I mean, once they start losing color, in my opinion, usually they go pretty quickly. But with, I believe the sponge I gave you was that like that purplish blue photosynthetic sponge. So I've had that, you know, kind of die off and then all of a sudden come right back.
Okay.
And it's really weird. Usually it's not very finicky, but if, you know, it starts to go out and potentially something could be a little off that like a sponge uses, maybe your silicate's too low or something. But usually that sponge is pretty hardy, so it should bounce back because I've had my sponges completely turn white with that specific species and then all of a sudden it just starts coming back. So it's really weird.
Nice. Okay, very cool. So yeah, I will keep you posted on that as that happens. So this right here.
Yeah, this is another really cool sponge that stuck out to me. Like yellowish orange, and it's like kind of like a webbing. Like it's a weird webbing texture. Super unique, and I had to get this on camera too. You know, I see cool things, and I just, you know, hit the record button because I like sharing it on my socials, just kind of sharing what I'm seeing, you know, on my little snorkeling adventures. But yeah, just a super unique sponge. I left this one alone because I wanted to see how fast it grows, you know, compared to some of the sponges that I have in my tank. Just every time I go back, check on it, see, you know, how its growth rate is. Yeah, super cool.
So based on what you see, the growth rate, or are you taking some, are you measuring it to see how big it grows, or just?
Yeah, I'm not measuring it technically. I'm just kind of, you know, playing it by sight. Like, okay, last time that was definitely a lot smaller and it's probably grown at least an inch, you know. I probably could get more, you know, realistic with it and actually take a measurement and just kind of document that stuff more closely. But me personally, I just like, you know, to go back there and see some of the corals that have been there, just, you know, or sponges starting to grow and get bigger and bigger. We eventually turn into big colonies. And then sometimes you see like the sponges specifically, I notice, like, I don't know if they're seasonal, but certain ones, you know, die off. And then within a few months, they start to slowly come back and then you get big colonies again. And it's really weird and strange how that all works. And that may be something that we could study down the road and try to figure out, because maybe that's why certain sponges die in captivity. Just, you know, they just slowly die off in the wild too. So, I mean, there's a lot of different factors that'll play into all this, but definitely a lot of scientific things that we could figure out. So right here, looks like we're looking at a bunch of little pinfish. There's a mangrove snapper and a giant sponge right there. And all those little like black dots are like spaghetti worms. We get them in our aquarium sometimes, you know, with the long tentacles, and they just kind of have little feelers going all over the place. I don't know if you've ever seen them, but they're quite common in the hobby. A lot of people have them. Some people see them and freak out, but they're just filter feeding invertebrates. They're not going to really do anything to your system at all. Yeah. If anything, it means that your system's pretty well established if you're keeping those alive long-term. But yeah, super cool. This, on this day specifically, you could tell like the water's pretty murky. If you look, it's probably maybe 3 foot, if that. Definitely a little cloudy out there. Yeah, super cool. Hop to the next one.
You see a lot of really cool things out there.
So this is a hidden cup coral. Okay. It's a non-photosynthetic LPS coral, similar to like sun corals and stuff. They got a large polyp. And you can kind of see their tentacles. It's like partially open right now. It's like a white translucent color. We have some people that have this in the hobby. And I actually have a couple pieces from like aquacultured live rock sites that we've got from like Tampa Bay saltwater and stuff. We get some cool corals in, like cladic, and then this hidden cup coral. It's super cool. And it's actually quite hardy. They do pretty well for me. They grow pretty fast. So at the time I filmed this, I think I have a newer video, but it's taken up a good portion of that rock now. Like it's probably 10 times the size of that. And that was taken last February. And I was just there a couple weeks ago, and it's quite literally almost taken up that whole rock. I'll have to try to find really that cool video. But yeah, super cool.
Yeah, if you can find that video, that would be cool to add next to this. Show like the before and the current state for
Definitely, for sure.
And we apologize to all of you podcast listeners that are just hearing us audio only. We do have video, a lot of video in this episode. So if you want to jump on to the YouTube video podcast whenever you can check out all of these awesome corals and sponges and sea fans and everything that Levi's talking about.
I do want to mention that. So this is a hard coral, and all Caribbean hard corals are protected in the state of Florida. Yeah. So you can't just go out into the ocean and for say, I see this and I think it's cool, you know, chip it off and put it in my tank. That is like a felony. That is not good. No bueno. Yeah. You're not allowed to take any live rock out of the oceans here in Florida either. The only people that are able to do that are people that have aquaculture leases out in the ocean, like Tampa Bay Saltwater, KP Aquatics down in the Keys. You know, they have a site that they like pretty much rent, and it has a bunch of live rock, you know, that they throw over the side, and all that stuff has to get approved. They got to get like all the rock inspected and stuff before they put it into the ocean. Like I said earlier, like they don't mess around with anything because I mean, the state that like the Reefs and the Keys are already with the hard corals and stuff. I mean, you got to be, they're very particular. So
yeah,
a couple years ago, I was mini season down in the Keys for lobster. And I was down there and I saw this on the news. Someone had taken a big staghorn colony and hung it on their balcony at their hotel. And someone must have called the police or something. They were just drying it out to bleach it out, to, you know, to use as coral decoration. And that was That's a huge insane. Colony. And they ended up going to jail and having like a $50,000 fine. And the crazy thing was they were able to, you know, take that coral's DNA and like track it back exactly to what reef it came from. So don't think, you know, if you go out and take something like that, they can't figure out like, okay, this is where it came from. Like, we know what you did. You can't say you didn't do it. But yeah, you got to be very careful with that stuff. So don't do it. Like,
That is very important to note. I'm glad that you brought that up because, yeah, you can't just take anything from the ocean. There's rules, regulations. Like you said, that fishing license only allows you to do so much. And it's not even talking about hard corals, like you said. And live rock is definitely a no-no.
And like I said earlier, just like if you don't know what you're doing, like do your research before you even think of, you know, taking anything, because they do not mess around.
Yeah, for sure. And so we got one more here. Well, actually, before we jump into this, why don't we jump into the scientific segment?
Let's do it.
And what do you got for us today?
So this is a local Gorgonian to like Tampa Bay and just Florida in general. On even up the eastern seaboard, up to like Massachusetts, even the yellow sea whip, and the same type of organism as like the purple sea whip, red sea whip, orange sea whip. It's all in the same exact species, just get different varieties, different colors, different morphs. You get some that almost like look like they grafted, kind of. But this is the yellow variety that I collected myself. This is Leptogorgia, not a super unique species. And I said, like I said earlier, it's relatively hardy in the aquarium. It does very well for me. It's one of my favorite species to keep just because it's a good filler for any NPS tank. Because if you're feeding and taking care of your aquarium, this can be a great grower, and it's going to crust on your rock and shoot out new branches. So yeah, super unique and super cool. And they come in many different colors. I know a couple different sites that have them, but Seahorse Savvy specifically usually has them in stock all the time. So yeah, just go try to find one. They're pretty cool. If you want to try your hand at a non-photosynthetic coral, this is definitely one I would give a shot at.
Very cool. The reefs being protected and the importance of like Coral Restoration Foundation and the things that they're doing to revive corals and to revive the reefs, just to hone in on the point of you can't just take anything out of the ocean because they're important to protecting the coastline from storms and things like that. So we want to make sure that the reefs are growing and we want to keep them strong. And like you said, there's a bunch of protected species out there. And just to touch on Coral Restoration Foundation briefly, I think it's really cool what they're doing out there. I would actually love to go visit the Coral Restoration Foundation and check that out. They have a whole facility that you can go and visit, and they have like different educational centers. And I was checking out, I don't know if you've seen the video on how they plant corals. Have you seen that?
I believe so.
Yeah. So they use the PVC pipes and they create the trees, the PVC yep. trees, and they hang like the different SPS, like the
from string
and stuff, string them up, put them out there and let them grow. But also, like I said, protecting the coastline from storms and bad weather. So coral reefs, super important. And I mean, they're breaking down all around the world, right? Yep. Reefs are showing signs of poor health. So yeah, you can't just go out into the ocean and collect whatever you want. A lot of this stuff is protected, and there's a lot of organizations that are doing what they can to kind of protect them and bring them back to a healthy state, like Coral Restoration Foundation.
Yeah. So like another thing I like to mention is, you know, reefs and like just different areas, specifically different types of ecosystem, mangroves and all that sort of stuff. They all play a role in like protecting us, you know, especially like hurricanes yeah. and stuff specifically, you know, the reefs are going to break the waves as the big swells come in. And then you have the mangroves that are going to protect the shoreline and hold the shoreline from like trying to, you know, keep the shoreline from eroding and that sort of stuff. But also the reefs specifically, I mean, you got all those small little reef fish that the big predatory fish are feeding on. And if all those, you know, elkhorn and staghorn and other different species of corals are dying, those fish aren't going to have that many, you know, places to hide. They're going to run trying to find new cover. Cause I don't know what exactly it is, but once like I've seen this specifically in person, like I've dove reefs in the Keys that are perfectly healthy. They look amazing. They're full of life, full of fish. And then I dove a couple that are all dead. Like all the corals are dead. You don't see nearly any fish anymore. All the fish, you know, go and find different areas. But if those corals keep dying, those fish are going to keep, you know, looking for different areas. And eventually they're probably going to end up getting picked off by the predators. You know, fish, you know, their populations start going down. And then the fish that we eat, you know, and have on our plates and stuff, and that play a big role in us eating, you know, are going to start dying off because they're not going to have stuff to eat. So, I mean, it all plays a yeah. role in everything that we do. Like the reefs are a big part of our lives, even though we don't even think it half the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Reefs are super important. And I don't know if you've seen this documentary yeah. here, Chasing Coral.
That's a great documentary.
It is an amazing documentary. And if you're new to the hobby or new to coral restoration and stuff, and you haven't checked out this documentary, check it out. I think it might still be on Netflix. I'm not sure. It might not be because they take things off and it's been a few years, but this is Chasing Corals. But you can see here.
Yeah. If you go back a little bit, I mean, you mm-hmm. can see where the dead corals are, like where this guy is right here. Where are the yeah. fish? There's no fish anymore. And look at like the difference. It's insane.
Yeah.
Like,
look at that. No fish there.
It's so weird. Like when the corals die, the fish go away. It's very strange. It's crazy.
Yeah. And then, like you said, talking about like the natural order of things, like the prey and the predators, the different fish, like there's nothing there anymore. So they go away. And then with it broken down, you've lost your coastal protection. And so, yeah. So corals are super important to the ecosystem. But yeah, definitely check out Chasing Corals. Not a sponsor or anything. But what is a sponsor, Levi? Have you heard of Printed Reef?
I have.
That's right. Printed Reef. Check this out, Levi. This is a copper band butterfly feeder, brand new from Printed Reef. And you know what? I need a copper band butterfly to test this on. So,
make it happen.
But yeah, I mean, they got like the little holes right here. I believe it's a magnet sticks to the side of your tank, and it allows the copper band to easily get in there and feed. So that way you're making sure that they're eating, and like, when you feed the tank, the food's not just going everywhere and the copper band doesn't have a chance to get it. You can easily get it right here with Printed Reef butterfly fish feeder. So if you're new to Printed Reef, you can save 10% off your entire order if you go to printedreef.com/thecoralreeftalk. And they do everything over there, from coral sand stands to the butterfly fish feeder to even bristleworm trap. So there's a lot of things over there that are unique and awesome for your reef aquarium. So go ahead, check out printedreef.com. And I know you've used some Printed Reef products yourself.
Yes, I have. Yeah, I can't remember exactly the name of what product I specifically use, but for a couple of my Gorgonians, you know, it works well, especially if I don't have a spot that I've decided on where to put them. They got a thing that you just kind of screw into the sand and have the frag plug in it, in the sand, and that worked out really well for me. It keeps the Gorgonians upright because they're obviously top heavy because, you know, they're tall and wavy. So yeah, they worked out specifically very well for the Gorgonians until I placed them on the rock. So yeah. definitely go check them out.
Yeah, that's really cool. They also have an SPS holder too. So if you get like an acro or something, you can cut that thing off the frag plug and glue it down to the SPS holder and put it anywhere in the rock, awesome. In your rock work that you want. So
nice.
Printedreef.com/the coral reef talk. That's pretty awesome. We've been talking about diving and collecting, and very important notes that you brought up about you can't just take anything from the ocean. So make sure you know what you're doing whenever you're collecting, especially here in Florida. You have to have that license that allows you to do that. And you can only collect up to five. You said five species per day with it. Any final thoughts, final notes on collecting, or another fun story, something that you have seen while you were down there?
Yeah. So if you want that last video, if you could pull that up real quick, I'll explain that. That was a really cool experience. I've seen it occur multiple other times, but this is probably about 20 foot. This is towards the bottom of the bridge, almost in the middle of the channel. You can see on the top right, there's a pillar, and that kind of begins the channel where all the boats are running through. So I don't want to obviously go past that because you're getting boats up ahead. And if I have to ascend like in an emergency or something, I don't want a boat hitting me, even though I have like a dive flag and stuff. You're not supposed to technically dive in the channels. So I kind of pulled myself down and I had some weights in my pocket just to kind of help me stay down. And I was just observing this giant school of spadefish. I mean, it was gorgeous. There's hundreds of them, and there's spawn. The school just goes on, and it's super cool. You see a little purple sea whip right there in the front, which I thought was really cool. But yeah, it was just super cool experience, and I love going down and seeing all the sea life, and like the spadefish specifically come right up to you, and they'll like shoal around you. I mean, it's such a gorgeous experience, just sitting there and absorbing God's creation. Just it's amazing. It's cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, outside of collecting stuff, just being able to experience that is, I imagine, is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
What is something else that you might be fearful of when going out there to collect, other than like sharks?
The spot that I go to the most, the current specifically, kind of scares me. I've had a scary experience once with the current. That's a very long story. It was super scary. And I learned a big lesson there. Other than that, just probably things that I don't know that are there, you know, because like I'll go down and I'll flip rocks and see something, you know, that kind of, whoa. Like, but other than that, I mean, sharks are probably my number one concern where I usually go. Just kind of trying to keep an eye out for them because, you know, bull sharks specifically are not usually that friendly.
Yeah.
And I mean, I like sharks. I really do. It's cool. Like, especially like that hammerhead that I saw the other day. That was just a really cool experience just to see. But you don't want to see them in certain circumstances, especially when they're trying to feed and stuff. But yeah, other than that, I don't think there's anything else that I'm like truly like afraid of, other than somehow like my worst experience snorkeling ever. I'll go ahead and explain this real quick. I was at this spot that I've been showing you guys clips of, and it was towards evening, and I didn't realize how, like, you know, like when you're underwater, I don't know how to explain this, but you can still see kind of decently. It was sunset, like the sun was going down, and I was all by myself, which is the number one no-no. Like, this was before Elizabeth moved down here to Florida with me. The current, it was a slack tide, so the current wasn't really moving at this time. And I saw this really cool Gorgonian. It was probably like 15, maybe a little bit more feet down that I could just barely see. And I wanted to go check it out. So, but as soon as I started to make my ascend down or descend, the current, like, I don't know, it was insane how fast it switched. The current started rushing out. And the Gorgonian, like, I was trying to swim down. And it just like disappeared, and I just started to see sand, and it was like a river. Like, it was crazy. Then I started swimming back up, and I popped my head up above the water, and I was probably 50 to 60 yards from the shore, and the water was just pushing me out. Like, the current was pretty much like a rip current. It was pulling me out. I couldn't really swim against it. So that was super scary. I kept getting further and further away from shore, and it started to get dark to the point like the lights on the highway are starting to come on.
Oh,
that was a very scary experience because I was probably 100 to 150 yards probably from shore when I finally kind of got to a point where I could swim sideways and kind of get out of the current specifically. And I just was like, I was freaking out. I was pretty scared because I've seen a couple sharks that day earlier, and it was pitch black. It wasn't pitch black yet, but like the water, like I couldn't see in the water anymore. Yeah. And I had my fins on. I like had my goggles on the top of my head. I'm like freaking out and trying to swim ashore. And I don't know why I did this, but for whatever reason, I was just panicking. I took off my flippers. I don't know why I did that. So I'm like carrying my flippers in my sidearm and just trying to kick with just my feet. And I eventually got back to shore, and I think I laid on the shoreline just on amongst the rocks that are on the edge there, just sitting there for probably a good half an hour, just like staring up at the stars. I'm like just so exhausted. But yeah, that was probably one of the most scariest experiences I've ever had. And there was a lot of things I did that or I shouldn't have done that led up to that, like just swimming alone in the first place and swimming that close to like, you know, dark.
Yeah.
Without any equipment or anything. So definitely learned a hard lesson there that still kind of haunts me to this day. Sometimes like I have nightmares of it.
I bet. But
I learned a hard lesson. Yeah. I don't really do anything alone anymore. And if I do, I let people know like, hey, I'm here. But I don't do anything like, oh, the sun's setting right now. I'm going to hop in the water and see what was going on. But yeah, I learned a hard lesson and I won't do that again. So
yeah, we're thankful and glad that you're still here. So yeah, that's crazy. That sounds terrifying. Well, on that note, don't dive alone. Always have someone with you. Yes. And don't swim at nighttime when the sun is setting. So thank you so much for checking out this podcast episode. I hope you learned something. I hope you had fun checking out Gorgonians and sea fans and sea sponges and just all the unique and awesome things that Levi shared with us today. And if you like this episode, be sure to hit that like button, hit subscribe. And thank you so much for watching. And we will see you in the next one.
See ya.